Well, the South Carolina Supreme Court, in a landmark 3-2 decision, ruled that the state's K-12 voucher program is unconstitutional, halting the use of taxpayer dollars to fund private school tuition. We have Representative Brandon Guffey here to kind of explain about the voucher program and its lifespan here in the state of South Carolina and how we got to this ruling. So first of all, let's welcome Representative Brandon Guffey to Palmetto Mornings. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the K-12 voucher program. You were telling us before the microphones turned off, this has been a discussion here in South Carolina for what, the last three governors?
That whenever I was reading on it, it goes back three governors of trying to push for school choice. And it's always been a, you know, how do we do it? What are other states doing? And then what does our Constitution say on what we can and what we can't do?
So when we do talk about a school voucher, what are we talking about exactly here?
So this program was to kick off, and it was limited to 5,000 students. And it was set to a poverty level. I think it come out to around $60,000 for a family to be able to apply. They couldn't go over that threshold. And it only gave $6,000 to go to your school of choice. But it could also go to tutoring, transportation, textbooks, or other classroom expenses should you choose to put your child into another school.
So if folks don't understand maybe how all this works, so let's break it down. So we all three have children in the Rock Hill School District.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's a certain dollar amount assigned to our child that goes to the district?
There is. I mean, I'm going to take my simplistic point of view. Take the amount of money that we give to the schools and you divide it per student throughout the state, it comes out to about $18,000 per kid. So whenever I'm looking at school choice and whenever I ran, I said, I'm not for school choice on the way it's being proposed because these schools don't have to offer lunch, breakfast, or transportation, you know, all the things that our public schools may provide. So I didn't feel like that was fair. However, if I'm looking at it and saying, okay, we're only given $6,000, so that other $12,000, in my opinion, should be an increase for those schools. However, I've kind of learned that those schools don't get the money unless there's a student going there to begin with. So it doesn't quite work out that way. But this was just a start to give people the option.
And when we hear the word school of choice, just want to make sure, because I think sometimes when we live in the Rock Hill schools, we also hear that. So school of choice is kind of the same thing, or is the same thing as the voucher allotment, not like school of choice within the Rock Hill schools.
Correct. Rock Hill schools is a little bit different. And I love that Rock Hill schools has been innovative in allowing students and adding these different types of programs. And I think the proof is in the pudding, you know, to get into some of our school of choice programs within the city of Rock Hill, there's a waiting list or you can't get in. And, you know, if I was Rock Hill schools, I would want to replicate that and say, this is what the parents are wanting. And the purpose of school of choice is to increase competition for one, but to also allow parents that want to give their child, say, more of a classical education or to have more of a Christian education. And perhaps you can't afford to send your kid there. This gives you the ability if the schools are willing to. And a perfect example is, you know, the I don't want to say the Catholic, well, maybe the Catholic Church had plans to put many schools in low-income areas, you know, and put that investment in based on the school choice and how it was going to grow. And I think that would overall benefit. Competition always drives.
And then other
results.
People need it too for maybe smaller classroom sizes. Some students don't do well in, you know, large settings. A lot of the public schools are huge. I mean,
yes.
They're busting at the seams, some of them, and in all of the areas that of our listening area especially. So that's just
Rock Hill Schools has great options with, you know, whether it be Montessori or language immersion, things of that nature. But not all these districts have that. However, if you know that your child does better in this setting and you want to send your child to that type of school, then you can. But it should also benefit those that, you know, want to ensure that their child is being raised in a Christian upbringing. If that's what they want to put that money towards. And this one's, like I said, it started out at, whenever we had the enrollment, 7,907 students applied for it. Now, as far as who is being affected, we couldn't go over the 5,000 people to begin with. And the reason that it was ruled against was due to the Blaine Amendment, which is an amendment that was written to keep, essentially to keep money out of churches or to keep it out of Christian education to begin with. But the dissent by our Chief Justice Kittredge, whenever he was sure to point out that with that ruling, it could also affect programs such as First Steps in South Carolina, which has been a tremendous value. We talk about the rising cost of childcare, and First Steps has helped so many families with that. And then it could also affect our state lottery funding, because if you are reading it, that is public funds going to, or that is public funds going to private institutions.
But that's what that's what you keep hearing in the headlines, right?
Yes,
that is how it's being presented or how it's being interpreted, though.
So, well, our Supreme Court and that ruling, we had one justice that needed to recuse himself because some tie with schools. And then another justice that we just recently elected that was not there. So we didn't have our full Supreme Court panel there, and it failed 3-2. But our new Chief Justice Kittredge is the one who offered that dissent. And him trying to explain it, I mean, you could tell that there was a little bit of anger with it, because I know in the House, we repealed the Blaine Amendment. I guess it did not go through the Senate. Now, we couldn't do it ourselves. It has to go as a referendum on the ballot. But I don't see it on there, so I'm assuming that it did not pass the Senate, and I'm not very good at following what the Senate does.
So what happens now, Representative Guffey? So this program, again, has been ruled unconstitutional by the South Carolina Supreme Court, halting the use of these taxpayer dollars to fund the private school tuition. So what happens to those that were currently using this program?
They're out of luck. That's one of the big problems that we're having, is the Supreme Court waiting to hear this decision after the school year started, and parents already have enrolled their students into these programs based on the law that we passed, that the General Assembly passed. And, you know, they were counting on that. And granted, these are low-income families. These aren't people that can just afford to just pull their kid and move them wherever they are. There's been some horror stories that I've read and things that are getting passed out across the state of these parents that are stuck. I've even seen GoFundMe pages for people just trying to raise money to keep their kid in the school that they're claiming is making an impact in their child's life already.
What's the biggest misconception with this program?
The biggest misconception is that it will kill public schools. And that's always been the argument, that we are taking money away from public schools. I don't see it that way. What we are doing is we are ensuring, and America became the first country to ensure that every child receives a quality education to begin with. And I think that we have become so focused, and it's truly due to our lack of funding to our schools, that it seems like everyone's fighting for every dollar. And the way to get those dollars is to keep those kids in the schools. So whenever we are saying, no, you can go to this other school, and public schools are held by these standards, and you know they're applying for federal grants, and they have to jump through all these hoops to ensure that they get that money too, it just becomes a problem, and they feel like it's giving them an unfair advantage, or for people to say that public schools aren't good. And I don't think that is the case. I think a lot of times it depends on your child and what you feel is best. And it's the age-old argument of, do parents know what's best for their children? Or do the educators, you know, and I fall on the side of, it's always a parent's right to choose their child's education.
So is the governor and others at that leadership level, are they looking to appeal this, or what happens next in that process?
I forget the term, but it's not an appeal, okay. But I think it can be brought back up, but it's not called an appeal. And if that happens and we have, a full court, I think things could change. However, I think the most important thing that we have to do if we want to clarify this language and if we don't want to end up affecting programs such as the lottery funding or First Steps, we need to repeal the Blaine Amendment. If you just Googled the Blaine Amendment, the first thing that pops up is says that it is a bigoted law that was put in place, way back when, and it's something that doesn't need to be in our constitutions to begin with.
Well, we'll continue to see what happens with the voucher program here in South Carolina. There's certainly a lot of folks working behind the scenes to see where this goes next. Representative Brandon Guffey, thank you so much for joining us and breaking down this topic. When it comes to education, everyone leans in closely, right?
Yeah.
And of course, when you talk about a voucher program, and then again, what happens to those individuals that are currently using this system right now?
Can I give one more quick stat? Just for those who want to say that this is only helping specific classes, the amount of people that applied for these scholarships, 8% of the children were of military personnel, 30.5% self-identified as white, 48% black, 6% Hispanic, 6% declined to say, and 1% Asian. So just sharing statistics to show how this is affecting, up to 5,000 kids or parents right now across the state that are struggling to find where their kid goes next.
And in all demographics.
Yes.
So those were good statistics.